Hey, we wanted to let you know about something exciting that the Lifeway Leadership Team is offering around the country for church leaders and church leadership teams. If you missed our Pipeline Conference last fall in Nashville, that means you missed out on a chance to have a full day of coaching on how to develop a leadership pipeline in your church. But you don't have to miss that, because throughout this spring, we are taking that coaching on the road. So we recently did a coaching day in Orange County, California, and then in the coming months, we'll be doing them in Dallas, Charlotte, Washington, D.C., Richmond area, and then Phoenix, Arizona. So if you go to myleadershippipeline.com/regionals, so that's myleadershippipeline.com/regionals, you can see these cities, you can sign up. These are full day events, so they run from the morning until mid to late afternoon. So it's a drivable kind of thing. You can bring a team with you. You can see more information there, myleadershippipeline.com/regionals. We would love it if you would join us in one of these cities to begin developing a leadership pipeline with your team. And then again, join us in the fall, in October, for our national conference in Nashville. We will have speakers like John Piper, Bob Russell, H.B. Charles, and others talking to us about transitions in leadership, so handing off from one leader to another. So again, go to myleadershippipeline.com to learn more, and specifically myleadershippipeline.com/regionals to sign up for a coaching day for your team.
Hey, and welcome to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. I am your host, Barnabas Piper, here as usual with Todd Adkins.
What?
Todd, we had the pleasure of talking with Ron Aguiar, who is the Director of Safety and Security at Southeast Christian Church, which is, what is that, about 20,000 people?
No. Well, it's more, it's way more than
20,000 plus. Then that's outside of Louisville, correct?
Yes. It is, you know, when you drive by, you're like, holy cow.
It's the Death Star.
This is huge. And because it's not one of those churches that have that many people and it's reported from a bunch of different campuses or it's a bunch of different services. No, when you go to Southeast,
they're not reporting.
It's like a
people
beehive.
Live streaming it.
It's a beehive. It's done in the round. I went there for a little bit in seminary before I started working at another church.
And that's where Bob Russell was
there at the time.
Bob Russell and then Dave Stone.
Yes.
And Kyle Eidelman. So if any of those pastors are people, listeners, who you have respect for, you've read, you've listened to, they are all part of the Southeast Christian leadership, either currently or formerly, sort of the legacy of that.
Yeah, he served all those people because he's been there for 18 years.
Yep.
And before that, he was with Papa John's International. So he protected the Papa.
That's right. He protected people. He protected from the pizza thieves. We recorded the interview already. Now we're doing the introduction, and I'm glad because I would have sort of given his bullet points.
You were skeptical.
I would have given the bullet points,
Barnabas,
and said this is going to be a practical, helpful thing. But what you will hear in this conversation is, I would say, one of the more practical podcasts we have done in a long time.
And which says a lot.
Yeah. I mean, we try to do useful things. anybody who serves in a church in any capacity, so volunteer, church leadership, senior leadership, or you're just in attendance, this is a podcast that will be incredibly helpful to you in terms of awareness of how church security works, how it could work better, how, you know, there are going to be things you just haven't thought of. You know, I've been around the church a long time. I've talked about church security with when I was on staff at a church and talking with my dad when he was helping make decisions on these things, and I learned an enormous amount in the 30-minute conversation about ways that to do it very effectively, to help people feel very at ease, to eliminate risk, all of these things that are part of the concern. So I was very impressed with what he offered, and so I mean
this is a guy who Lifeway has used as well for years and years as a contractor for all our large events, including 2 years ago
Beth Moore's events and things like that.
When George W. Bush was at the men's conference 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like he can hang with the big boys and they respect him because of his tenure in the industry and just his knowledge. He drops knowledge.
But you can tell that he also deeply cares about the church and the ministry.
Totally.
So he's not just sort of a tactician. He's somebody, I mean, he sees security as a ministry to the church. That's, I mean, yeah. And that comes up in the conversation. And so just tone and foundation wise, there's that woven in as well.
I will say this, if you are at a church and you're on staff and you don't have security, this is a must listen for you, but you need to pass along to your pastor or other people on your staff, as well as if you're just attending a church, you need to say, and you don't have church security or you don't know if it's in place, this is a good podcast to pass along to them as well. In general, this is a good podcast to pass along.
It's a good podcast. So we mentioned that he has been at Southeast Christian. He's actually transitioning out of that role after close to 20 years and starting a company called Oasis Safety, where he can now take his level of expertise and experience to go serve churches in a broader context. So if you go to oasissafety.com, what you'll find there is the opportunity to sign up for church safety seminars of various varieties, as well as a focus on sexual abuse prevention, which, as we know, is something that we've seen way too much of in the church.
Yeah.
It's something that it seems to be, it's either a growing problem or a problem we have growing awareness of. Either way, it's a problem. And he and Oasis Safety would like to help churches handle that well. So go to oasissafety.com to check that out. Now, here is our conversation with Ron Aguiar. You will find it enlightening, helpful, and I think he's an engaging person.
Yes.
And I think you will find this very, very interesting. So whether you're somebody who goes and sits in the second row every Sunday or somebody who serves week in and week out, this is something you will find very helpful. So here's the conversation with Ron. Enjoy. We are here today with Ron Aguiar, who is he is a experienced and an expert in church safety and security, but also just safety and security in the corporate context as well, as you heard in the introduction. Ron, thanks so much for joining us on the Five Leadership Questions podcast.
You're welcome.
Would you mind giving our listeners just a sense of a little bit about your background in terms of where you've been, how you got to where you are, your current role? And then you just mentioned to us before we started recording a new venture you are starting, and you can introduce that a little bit as well.
Yeah, fantastic. I'm a former police officer, spent years with the Honolulu PD, Hawaii County PD, and the state of Massachusetts. Left security and got into another business, and then eventually ended up in Louisville, Kentucky as the director of safety and security at Papa John's International for 4 years. And recently, for the last 18 years, I've been director of safety and security at Southeast Christian Church in Louisville, Kentucky. I am in the process of transitioning out of my role after 18 years and looking at new venture, and that new venture is called Oasis Safety. And I'll be providing safety and security seminars at churches, parachurch organizations, private Christian schools, basically talking about church safety and security. And then the second topic will be sexual abuse prevention, where the school settings will come into play also.
Which sadly is something that people have to pay
yes.
special attention to. I mean, there's so many stories. It seems like there are far more now than there used to be about things like sexual abuse in the church and just church safety and security issues in general. So it's unfortunate that you need a job.
It is.
Yeah, it really is. The safety, the issue that has come about in the United States in the last 20 years is the media has gotten instantaneous. So if something happens, it's reported quickly. And so that increases people's knowledge of what's going on out there. And then in the last 10 or 15 years, of course, their church sexual abuse has been really targeted. And so I feel that's a really strong area. I mean, a lot of people don't realize it, but the CDC says that 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys by the time they're 18 will be sexually abused. It's just really a horrifying number. But my job, and there's others in the country to do this, is to just inform people in how to prevent this and protect the children.
Well, I think this leads into our first question really well. And that is, do you think security is a greater issue for churches now than it has been in the past?
Yeah, I believe so. We're getting bigger. There's more and more mega churches that are growing every day. Church populations are increasing. We are targeting more inner cities, more areas of the country that normally do not see evangelism. So people are going out and stepping out So yes, I think as we just recently, the terrorism ISIS just issued a edict about Christmas time that lists a bunch of churches in the U.S. as being targeted. Now, they do this twofold. Number one is to frighten us, and the second is for us to be aware that they're coming. I think the Lord gives us signs of this to come. So I really believe that the churches need to start being aware, start protecting themselves a little bit better. There's more and more churches are setting up safety and security teams for this venture, and it's unbelievable how this has helped. I hear story after story that after teams are set up, the things that they prevent.
Well, that – and so, I mean, it's a greater issue. You mentioned the media, the scrutiny, and it seems like especially violent actions tend to come in waves. And I don't know if that's just media coverage that leads us to believe that, or if it's if that's a real thing. But that seems to be the case. Our next question is, this is getting into a little bit the more practical, and maybe we can spend a little more time digging into this. You mentioned churches setting up security teams. The question is, how should churches handle security, or how can they handle security if they're not in a position to hire staff? You know, there are churches who can contract with an organization, or who have former law enforcement who can head that up. But there are smaller and mid-sized churches who can't afford to do that. So how can they handle security well?
There really is some easy and practical ways to do it. Number one is I partner with your local police department or sheriff agency. Have them come into the church and do a free assessment. They'd love to do this. Plus, you've got them into the church. They've become familiar with your property and buildings. And if there's ever a problem, an emergency, then they know your buildings and know where to go. I think that's number one. And do the same thing with the fire department. That's really, really important. Get to know your fire marshal. The other thing is that 99.9% of all police agencies across the country allow their police officers to work off duty, and because they just don't pay them enough. So I strongly recommend, as the best practice, is hire an off-duty officer for 4, 5, or 6 hours a weekend to be in uniform and have a patrol car on your premises. And you're hiring them as an off-duty officer as a separate contractor, so you don't pay any benefits or anything. You just pay them a straight hourly fee. And sometimes you contract through the police department or contract through the individual. And they're there to help protect you. And if anything happens, then they're covered and protected by their agency. So the liability to the church is very diminished, if any. And so that's a great thing to do. And it also is part of your risk management program that you tell your insurance company about. And when you do this, it may lower your premiums at the end of the year because you're protecting your property and lowering your risk. So I think that's the first thing. The second thing is, if you're not able to afford the $30 an hour or so for a police officer off duty, then find somebody in your congregation that's former law enforcement or military and have them trained and make them a part of, or starting up a team and bringing together your ushers, your greeters, and maybe 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 people that you can trust and make a safety or security team. And that's a start. And then have some training. Have the local PD come in and train. They'll do that free. I mean, they want a safe building. So you'll get a lot of free services from the government.
So I realize I might be putting my foot in it here, but I'm going to go ahead and ask this anyway. Do you recommend, so in the example of, say, bringing in retired military, former law enforcement training ushers, do you think it's wise to have armed security in the church, or is this more of an emergency response team so that they're sort of they can help marshal the crowd a little bit?
Right. That's I'll go to a seminar and speak for 2 hours, and I say, any questions, and 30 hands will go up and ask me about guns in churches. That's
everyone. which is why I asked.
That's where we were going to go.
I figured it was a question that's, yes, a listener would have in their mind and not be able to ask.
This
so I'd
is
ask
bad.
For them.
Last week I was at Passion, and I got to go play downstairs a little bit and talk to some folks and hang out. And I get a call when I get back to Nashville, and it is Passion telling me, we found your conceal and carry permit in the green room.
I'm glad it had your name on it. Right?
And I'm glad it was the permit and not the thing that goes
not
with the permit.
Yes. So I would never, ever, I mean, you know, I, I know that I shouldn't do that, but I don't know that other people know that they not necessarily should be packing in a church.
Right. And I go back to the best practice, hire a police officer, because they're sworn to carry a gun and a badge. And that totally eliminates the need of having a civilian in your church carry a gun. And I think that's so, so important. Now, again, if you make the step and you say, I'm not going to do that, I'm going to bring a lay person or former law enforcement or military in, then you got to work with your insurance company, your attorney, your elders, or deacons, whoever they are, the church leadership. Get everybody's buy-in, because you're probably going to have to buy us what they call a rider to an insurance policy to help cover the individual carrying the gun. Make sure they have a CCW. Make sure they do some extra training, maybe with a shooting instructor from the local PD, because a gun is really a weapon that once you press the trigger, you can't bring that bullet back. And so the decision to fire or not fire is really a decision that you will have to live with the rest of your life. When I was a police officer, I was shot at once and pulled my gun twice. Never, Lord, thankfully, never been shot. The bullet never hit me, and I never had to shoot anybody. But when I put that gun back in my holster, arrested the individual, I'll tell you what, I was shaking for about an hour. I mean, it really is a really tough situation. So train the person, get them covered by insurance and protection. And don't allow everybody to carry a gun, because then it becomes a Wild West. Everybody will shoot at each other and the bad guy walks away. So the thing is, one or two at the most, any church, you really don't need more than that. If you're a mega church, then you can afford to hire one or two or three off-duty officers, hire them, and don't allow any guns. The other question that I get is, if you see somebody in church that's carrying an open carry or a concealed carry and they walk into your church, what do you do? And again, I revert back to that police officer.
And that was my next question too. So I appreciate you posing it for yourself.
Yeah, because that's what everybody asks. So I go back to the police officer. I'd grab that officer and say, listen, can you check that guy out? And what we do here is I walk up with an officer, introduce myself, and say, hey, listen, are you a police officer? And if they are, then I tell them, cover up the gun or show your badge. If they're not a police officer, I bring them out of the service or wherever they're at, and I talk to them and basically said, listen, we're private property, and I really would not like you to carry a gun. Can you put it in the car? People get a little nervous. And the pushback will come, well, I have a CCW. Or this state is an open carry state, I can carry. And then I revert back again and say, it's private property, please put the gun in the car. If you don't, I'm going to ask you to leave the property. And if you don't leave the property, we'll arrest you for trespassing.
And so just to clarify for listeners, private property owners have the right to say no firearms on the premises, correct?
Absolutely. It's just like your home. Barnabas, if you came into my home with an open carry gun, and I've got some kids, you know, Barnabas, put the gun in the car, please. So, and that's the same thing. It's the same way. The government doesn't own the church property. You do. So consequently, you can ask them to leave. It's just a safety issue. It causes concern amongst everybody. It may cause somebody carrying a concealed to pull his gun, cause a problem. People get shot just because they see a gun.
Right.
Well, I do have a follow-up question to that. So we are in Nashville.
Yes.
And I grew up in Kentucky, and I lived in D.C. for a while. And in D.C., I quickly discovered, because I always carry a knife. I always carry a pocket knife. It's usually a fairly decent sized pocket knife, but
yeah, we're not talking Crocodile Dundee. We're just talking buck knife,
more than six inches long. Yes.
Yeah, and so I quickly learned there, because I would have meetings in government buildings and all that, and I can't tell you how many things I had, you know, confiscated or had to mail back to myself or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
In certain sections of the country, there are going to be people that carry those types of things. How do you address that, or do you even bother addressing that?
Well, it's what we learn and what we see. I mean, if your safety team or your ushers, which are really your frontline people because there's more of them than a safety team, when they see something and they let the safety or security team know that there's something, then we'll address it. I mean, if the guy's carrying a gigantic knife that we can see, we'll address it. And do the private property thing again. But most of the time, we're not going to see a knife. We're going to see a gun. And I've seen that many times. The other thing to remember is, for churches is, and you mentioned going to Passion. That's at a big arena, seats 70,000 or whatever. Most arenas in the country do not allow concealed carry.
No.
In fact, some arenas, I work and travel with someone who speaks in arenas. And when we go into arenas in the backstage, sometimes there's metal detectors for us. So I can't carry a gun into most arenas either. So that's just an offshoot, but sometimes churches do things like Passion at arenas, and let's bring our security team where you can't carry a gun, not unless you're a law enforcement officer. So again, I revert back as that's like my mantra, please. Most churches can afford $30 an hour to have a police officer there, and that really eliminates all this stuff. I have a friend who just retired from a federal agency, and he carries his gun, of course, with him all the time when he was with the agency, and he'd come to church, and his wife would say, "Hey, listen, Paul, what I'd like you to do is, if something happens, are you going to go after the guy?" And he looked at her and he says, "Unless he's right next to me, my job is to get you out of here, because if I pull my gun, I'm getting shot."
Yep.
So guns are, you know, just got to be really careful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good deal. Well, how can churches handle security in a way that helps people feel safe and not like there's an impending threat?
Yeah. It's a really balance between security and ministry. And I think there's two things called hard and soft security. The hard security is the police officer with the uniform in the car that's under the portico or walking in the atrium. I think most people sort of expect that in today's society. They love seeing that. But again, you can't put metal detectors or anything of that nature around. If you use security cameras, they're always good. Don't put real gigantic ones. Hide them a little and put them up. The guys that want to do trouble or harm will see them. The normal people will walk by them and not see them. So that's the soft security. The soft security is the plainclothes safety team, plainclothes off-duty volunteer police officers. That's your soft security, but people know it's around and they see it, but they're not nervous about coming to church because they think they're setting up to prevent some big trouble. The other thing is, a lot of churches and safety teams wear this little earpiece with the curly thing that you see.
the Secret Service looking thing.
There you go. You got it. Well, we all do that because it's a great way to communicate, and that's what they've designed to use. I tell churches, I said, equip your ushers with them. And then when somebody wants to do harm, they look around. There's 40 guys wearing this stuff on their ears. They have no idea how many security people you have. So I think it's a great deterrent also.
Part of what was behind that question goes back to the last conversation we were having about firearms, because I grew up in when I was born, it wasn't a mega church. By the time I moved away from home, it was a mega church in Center City, Minneapolis. And there has been, or was for quite a while, an ongoing debate about whether they wanted openly armed security or what you had described, sort of the off-duty or retired law enforcement with concealed carry. Minnesota is a concealed carry state. And I don't even know where they landed on it, but the concern was, if there are people who are openly carrying weapons, even if they have badges, there's a sense of somebody who's walking into church and only thinking about, I get to hear a sermon, I get to go study the word, I get to connect with people, all of a sudden they're thinking, wait, is something bad going to happen? And so it sort of plants a seed. So obviously I'm asking you to think about the psyche of a church attendee, but that's really kind of the question is, how do we help that person who's never considered these issues think about church security, or do we not want them to have to think about it?
Yeah, I think most millennials, and I address them because that's my daughter and my son, kind of expect a little bit security. I mean, they don't mind seeing one or two cops, but if you put 30 at the door, then they're going to get, whoa, I'm not going in. So I think there's a balance. We use our security guys to direct traffic. So, I mean, I've got some in the building, but they're plain clothes mostly. So if you're coming to church, you're not going to even see a uniformed officer at the door. You'll see them directing traffic. Now, once you're sitting in the sanctuary or worship service, my security then comes into the building. That's what I recommend. Then you see the uniforms because everybody's worshiping. They're not paying attention to what's happening in the sort of darkened hallways and atrium. And that's when these guys appear. They protect the money. They protect the building. And when service lets out, guess where they're at? They're directing traffic again. And my plainclothes security then handles the interior. So it gives a nice balance. So yeah. They don't see the uniforms walking around the building the whole service. Cool. So people are concentrating on service. I think that's the way to do it. By the way, I think your church that you were talking about, if I'm familiar with it, does have uniform guards. And what they've done is they've caused, in some states, you're allowed to set up your own police department in a private setting, such as Answers in Genesis, for instance. I use them because everybody knows them outside of Cincinnati. They yeah. provide, they started and maintained their own police department, and those people are only sworn on that property and they can wear a uniform. Some churches have gone to that. Mm-hmm. I've decided not to do that because, again, it would show too much force, and I thought that wasn't right for ministry. There's got to be a balance.
Well, and as you said, if those people are coming in from directing traffic into the service, then the people that are in the service paying attention to the worship aren't going to notice them. But again, as you, just like the cameras, the bad yep. guys are, though.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, it's a soft entrance because you saw them, you know, wearing an orange vest and waving yep. people in and, you know, yep. and so there's a sense of orderliness. And so then if you were to walk out and go to the restroom during service and you see four or five police officers, it doesn't feel like there's a crisis. You go, oh, those guys are just getting the air conditioning or they're getting out of the cold yeah. or they're right. sort of where the people are. So that, yeah, sure. that makes a lot of sense.
The other thing that I would tell churches is when you bring these guys in, there's got to be somebody walking the children's wing, the junior, senior high area. We forget about our kids. So don't forget about our kids. Every church that has uniformed people or even a safety team, make sure some people are walking the halls mm-hmm. in the children's wing during service.
Well, mentioning the kids and the students areas of churches, I think introduces our fourth question pretty well, because it's a question about what are two or three things that a normal congregant can do to assist in church security, which I wonder if there's a tie there to what you mentioned at the beginning about the about sexual abuse prevention and awareness, because I feel like especially as it pertains to normal congregants and children, that's a thing that people can be very aware of. So I'm not trying to lead you into an answer. I'm just yeah. curious if that's yeah. where the answer is going to go.
Yeah, it's just interesting. The government has this see something, say something. And I think you got to do that. I think we're all born with this innate ability to stay alive. We have this observant sense about us. We feel danger when it gets close. I think the Lord provides that. And oh, by the way, when you get that Holy Spirit inside of you, I think he gives you an extra measure of that. Anyways, if you see something that's really bothering you or just doesn't seem right, then grab an usher, grab somebody from the church with authority, somebody you see walking on the radio or just a name tag, and say, hey, listen, that doesn't look right. I can tell you instance upon instance where people in churches have shook the hand of somebody walking in and went, man, that just didn't feel right, and not say anything. And then that individual then creates violence and hurts somebody in the church. You got to say something. If it doesn't feel right, doesn't look right, say something. Somebody gets within your personal space of 3 or 4 feet and you feel uncomfortable, tell somebody. I have many instances here where that happens. And I quickly walk up to somebody. I'm in plain clothes, of course. So I just walk up, shake my hand, and said, hey, welcome to Southeast. How you doing? What's your name? My name's Ron. And if they're a bad guy, they're not going to tell me their name. I'll immediately know that there's something wrong. And I mean, we can deal with it at that point in time. But if they are a bad guy and I recognize them, maybe they'll leave or not do anything.
What are some of the things that you recommend? So churches that have security teams and or security ministry, I mean, that sounds a little bit like mm-hmm. a funny phrase, but I think it's a real thing. How do you recommend they train people in the church? So people who work with children, people who work with students, people who are greeters and ushers. So what sort of training do you recommend in those contexts?
If you have a team in place already, then you've got a couple of one or two leaders that are well-versed in the programs, I'd start meeting with staff and key volunteers first. First of all, your staff should know what you're doing and how you're doing it. Children's ministry, your staff and leaders in your children's ministry and volunteers, they should all know what you're doing. The ushers, you need to meet with them. As big as we are, I meet with our usher captains twice a year, and we sit down and talk about security and medical and safety issues that have gone on and will go on. And I answer all the questions. And then I meet with the ushers, for instance, they get together before serving, and I'll meet with groups of them on occasion and just talk. And that opens up a lot of discussion, because then they'll start sharing with you information that they've seen over the year or so. But get to know them and start talking to them. Meet them in small groups and just answer questions and tell them what you're doing. And this whole thing about see something, say something, that's where you attach that. That's where you start telling them, when you see something that's not right, let us know. In the children's area, it's a really different tactic, because you're talking about prevention of abuse, of sexual abuse, of physical abuse, or whatever it may be. And you're asking them now to focus on other parameters. So what we've done is we've brought in like a registered nurse who's trained in that area, and she'll sit with these groups of volunteers and staff and share more information. There's companies out there that do training for sexual abuse prevention. And, you know, like I said, I'm doing seminars, and there's other companies out there that do this. Go out there and get them and bring them in. I've done training here for the general population. We ran a class here for people just attend the church, and I spend an hour talking about sexual abuse. And it's interesting, because they walk away and they go, wow, I didn't know that was going on. And what we're telling them to do is just protect the children.
I have a quick scenario for you. So I was an executive pastor before coming to Lifeway. And so there's a service one evening where way up in the balcony, there's baptisms that are occurring, and this individual decides to start screaming, baptize in the name of Jesus after every single one.
Right.
So it happened twice, and I go up there like to confront the individual. Mm. Our church security team, they were very upset with me. So what should if a staff person is listening to this, you know, there's going to be different levels of emergency or crisis.
Sure.
So do you have any, you know, kind of practical guidelines of, hey, it's OK to address this. It's OK for an usher to address a crying baby. But when it's, when it's a heckler heckling the pastor,
unstable person,
how do you handle that?
Yeah, we tell our pastors, listen, just hold back a minute. Let us go take care of this. Make sure it's okay, first of all, because they may be doing that to attract the pastor. There was talk about tragedies. There was a tragedy in Maryville, Illinois, a few years ago, where a guy walked into a service, early morning service with about 200 people, and conversed with the pastor who was on stage, got him off the stage and conversed with him. No one walked up to the guy and grabbed his elbow and said, hey, can I help you? I mean, he was interrupting the service. What he eventually did was take a gun out and shot and kill the pastor. So, you just have no idea what the premise and mindset of the individual is. So let the safety team take care of it. And if it deems where you feel, okay, I can let the pastor talk to this guy, because that maybe really helped the situation. But most part, especially on the weekends, I would suggest that the pastor or executive pastor or whoever kind of stand back and let the safety team take care of this, because they're well-versed and they understand it. Plus, they may have information on the individual. Local police department may have shared some information about somebody coming to churches that may cause a problem. We've had them here jump up and scream and yell in the middle of service, and they get escorted out and arrested by our off-duty officers. So you just have no idea what's going on. So just be careful. Let the safety team take care of it, and then the worship service just continues.
Which all kind of, I mean, it all feeds to the point you're making earlier about people who are ushers, who are volunteers, and who are church leaders knowing who the security team is.
Yes.
And having,
absolutely.
Because you have to know where to funnel these things. It's easy to go address a mom with a baby or a child who's jumping on a pew or something, but the moment there's any question of security, you have to know who to go to.
And, you know, we've tried pagers and all kinds of stuff. What works best are radios. I mean, the family channel radios in small churches work best. You can buy them for $40, put an earpiece in them. They work great. Give the ushers, captains or leaders, those radios so they can contact you immediately. In the bigger churches, you're going to have to get some commercial radios, and they're going to cost $250 or $300 a piece. But it's instantaneous messaging and communication. And at that point in time, it makes it so much easier to respond. I gave a church seminar in Kentucky on Tuesday night. Had about 5 church representatives there, 40 people. And that's the one thing they were asking, how do you communicate? Well, get some radios. And everybody was like, wow, okay, sounds good. But, you know, everybody was doing cell phones. But cell phones are great, but they're not, oh, by the way, I can't talk to 10 people at once.
Right.
Yeah. And so the radios come out really well, and I would strongly suggest that for communication. And that's where then, if somebody does stand up where there's a problem, they can call security and say, listen, safety team, we need you here outside of Section 102. We got a guy that's causing a problem.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to ask this question. So a lot of our listeners, are just volunteers or leaders in the church. They're not necessarily pastors. They're leaders in, their own businesses. And then they just happen to love Jesus and go to church. So what are 2 or 3 things that everybody listening, whether you're, a pastor or a church attender, what are 2 or 3 things that people should remember if there's ever a crisis situation in a church? Like, what are 2 or 3 things that I should know and do?
People ask me about violence in the church, what happens. Everybody's concerned about active shooters. And so I'll address that first. If somebody pulls a gun or a weapon and starts hurting people, if you're not on top of them within an arm's length, your job is to run away and take as many people as you can. Get as far away from the violence as you can. Let whoever the safety team is, the off-duty officers, whoever they are, to let them get to it and address it. Your job is to run away. The second thing is call 911. Most people think somebody's going to call 911, and you'd be surprised how no one calls 911 in an emergency. I've had instances where we've had a full-blown incident occurs, and I turn around and said, anybody call 911? And they say, Did you? So in a situation, pick the phone up and call 911. If you can't, point at someone and tell them to call 911. Those are 2 very, very important things. And medicals and anything relating to people that are sick and hurt in that situation, let the doctors, nurses, and EMTs take care of it and just stay away and provide some space for them.
So just to reiterate the point, the responsibility to call 911 falls on anybody with a cell phone.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So it's not waiting for waiting for security, waiting for whatever. No, just get out your phone and call. And if 911 gets 82 calls, then they'll really know something serious is happening.
Yeah,
absolutely. Don't be afraid to just keep ringing and call. I mean, it's important that they know what's going on. Again, I go back really to the start of our conversation about an off-duty officer. Mm-hmm. They've got a police radio. They can call for assistance immediately. It makes a difference.
No, I mean, that's a very practical point in terms of just dispatching needs. So that's a really helpful thing.
Yeah.
Well, Ron, thanks so much for taking the time with us. This has been really helpful. I think this is very practical. I think it's eye-opening. I've been in the church my whole life and have had some of these conversations, but just having you practically lay out some of the implications of communication and radio and off-duty police officers is very eye-opening. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I appreciate you asking.
And for listeners, Ron's company is Oasis Safety. If you go to oasissafety.com, that's where you can find out more about church safety seminars, sexual abuse prevention seminars specifically aimed at the church. So if this is something you'd like to invest in your church leadership, in just for yourself as a church leader, go to oasissafety.com to look at that. If you go to lifeway.com/leadership, we will have all of this in the show notes, so you can find it there. It's where we always post this. So go to lifeway.com/leadership to find that out as well. We really appreciate you listening, and we hope you join us again for the next episode. Thanks, and tune in next time.